Good morning, everyone. By way of disclaimer, a lot of what I have to say today was prepared and dug out by another brother. I was doing some research online and found a Christadelphian who did some significant work on the Book of Mark. And I gleaned a lot of this from him. Surprisingly, there was no name attached, so I can't tell you who it was. But I've added some things on my own and research, but I just wanted to make that statement. So this morning, John Mark, part two. What does it mean to be a servant? And I'll tell you to keep one hand in Mark, and we'll be going back and forth between Isaiah as well. Most of you will have marked in your Bibles at the beginning of the Gospel of Mark that Mark presents Jesus as the perfect servant. That description should make this Gospel very special to us. It speaks to one of the most important aspects of our life and the truth, our discipleship. These aspects of being a servant would include work and trial and suffering. In our last exhortation, we saw how the Gospel according to Mark is essentially divided into two parts, each one highlighting those characteristics of a good servant. We also introduced Mark personally and attempted a brief biographical sketch, the house he grew up in, a meeting place for the local ecclesia, his up and down relationships with Paul and Peter. At a young age, Mark's uncle, Barnabas, wanted Mark to be a servant and minister to himself and to Paul as they set out to preach the gospel. There was going to be work and suffering. Was Mark ready? No. Mark was a disappointment at that time, and he left them. However, over time, with the probable help of Peter, he developed into the servant and minister both Paul and Peter needed and would go on to trust. For today's second and final look at John Mark, there are several themes or lessons we wish to share and to expound upon. The gospel according to Mark has many unique things to teach us, and it is hoped that we can present some of them to you in a way that will encourage you and your faith. There's four main points that we're going to cover. We're not going to go through these one by one. They're going to be kind of mixed up together and dealt with together. So as I read over this last night, I've got a substantial fear that at some point I may lose you. I hope not. But these are the four things that we're going to be looking at today. We'll look at how the book is organized and set up in a way to improve the message and make it easier to remember. By organizing his gospel like this and using sets of threes, Mark presents the key aspects of being a servant, the work and the suffering. Number three, Mark makes multiple references to Isaiah, and we will show how he uses those scriptures to help teach his contemporaries and all those who would serve Yahweh through the ages. Finally, we get to fully answer the question, who say ye that I am? As Peter answered, thou art the Christ. But Jesus was also the suffering servant. This is what shines above all else in the gospel according to Mark. Jesus as the servant. Servant to his followers, servant to his disciples, and above all else, a servant to Yahweh. To begin, let's turn to Mark chapter 8. How Mark structures his gospel is very interesting. It is quite involved, and we will touch on just a few points. This is where audiovisual aids would really help, but I'm not schooled in how to use them very well, so we'll do our best. We'll do old school today. Reading from Mark 8:27-29, some familiar verses. And Jesus went out and his disciples into the towns of Caesarea Philippi. And by the way, he asked his disciples, saying unto them, who do men say that I am? And they answered, John the Baptist. But some say Elias, and others, one of the prophets. And he saith unto them, but who say ye that I am? And Peter answered and said unto him, thou art the Christ. I guess in a way we're still in a review session portion here, but one way of looking at Mark is that it is simply in two sections, with verses we just read as the center. Prior to this, Jesus is presented as the servant at work. He's presented as always on the go from town to town, healing, performing miracles, feeding thousands. At this midpoint, the servant starting at Caesarea Philippi and making his way to Jerusalem, never straying from the path, but setting his face to go to Jerusalem. The religious leaders wanted to push him out of the way, get at him, and eliminate his threat to them. They did not understand. The people of the time continued to laud him and follow him, seeing him as their savior now. They did not understand. His disciples allowed the flesh to creep in and were concerned with who would be the greatest and who would sit with whom in the kingdom. They did not understand. The second half of Mark, an arduous journey on the way to Jerusalem, and then the suffering of the servant and the death of the servant. So it can be seen that Mark has his gospel record in two halves. The first leads to the second, the servant at work to the servant who endures pain and suffering. Mark will often present events, lessons, and phrases in sets of three. He will often frame things for us or make use of the chiasmus. You may remember that term from a previous talk. Briefly, it is where there's a section of verses or ideas, and similar mirroring themes will open and close the section. The parts immediately following the first and preceding the last will mirror each other, and so on, with the main point being found in the middle. Our first consideration of threes will not be a true chiasmus, but we will encounter one later. As we take a close look at how the gospel according to Mark opens and closes, we might pick out some lessons that help to teach them and us about Jesus. So let's begin. Let's turn to Mark chapter 1. Mark 1, verse 3. The voice of one crying in the wilderness, prepare ye the way of the Lord and make his paths straight. John is a voice crying. This is the Greek word boeo, meaning to exclaim, an urgent call. Mark 1, verse 10. And straightway coming out of the water, he saw the heavens opened, and the Spirit like a dove descending upon him. He saw the heavens opened. Opened is the Greek word schizo, meaning to split, cleave, or tear. Finally, Mark 1:11. And there came a voice from heaven saying, Thou art my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. Thou art my beloved Son. The three ideas here, boeo, exclaim, schizo, cleave or split, and then my beloved Son. Let's turn to the end of Mark's gospel and turn to Mark 15. Mark 15:34. And at the ninth hour, Jesus cried with a loud voice, saying, Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani, which is being interpreted, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? It says Jesus cried with a loud voice, the same Greek word, boeo. A little further down, Mark 15:38. And the veil of the temple was rent in twain from the top to the bottom. The veil rent in twain. The same Greek word we saw before, schizo. Mark 15:39. And when the centurion, which stood over against him, saw that he so cried out and gave up the spirit, he said, Truly this man was the Son of God. Truly this man was the Son of God. So in both instances, the beginning and the end of Mark, we have instances of crying out, a splitting or a cleaving, and a mention of him being the Son of God. But these matching set of threes at the beginning and the end of Mark's gospel account, probably the overriding and most important lesson of the book is stressed. This was the Son of God. By the use of exclaiming, crying out, then a cleaving and opening up to reveal who Jesus truly is, the Son of God. Before we leave this interesting set of threes at the beginning and the end of Mark, we do well to look to the prophet Isaiah. We'll turn to Isaiah chapter 64. Isaiah can be seen as similar to Mark in that it can be divided into two distinct sections. Isaiah's chapters 1 to 33 are often seen as focusing on Jesus as the future king. After a three-chapter set of a narrative involving Hezekiah and events concerning him, chapters 36 to 66 contain much of the account of the suffering servant, or description of the suffering servant. Jesus is the perfect servant. Granted, much of the New Testament will have connections and references to Isaiah, but the Gospel of Mark has its share and then some. So, remembering our trio of crying out, exclaiming, tearing, then Jesus as the Son of God, we'll look at Isaiah 64, verse 1. O thou that wouldest rend the heavens, that thou wouldest come down, that the mountains might flow down at thy presence. Isaiah had a plea for the rending, and Mark described it. We remember, and straightway coming up out of the water, he saw heavens opened, and the Spirit like a dove descending upon him. And there came a voice from heaven saying, Thou art my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. So we see the connection there. This word phrase, well pleased, and also translated, maybe also translated, delight or delighted. That word is going to show up again often as we go along today. For now, turn to Isaiah 42, verse 1. For Isaiah's theme matching Mark, where it says, Thou art my beloved Son. Isaiah 42, 1, Behold, my servant, whom I uphold, mine elect, in whom my soul delighteth. I have put my spirit upon him, he shall bring forth judgment to the Gentiles. What we see is that the lessons and teachings of Mark as it concerns the Christ, the perfect servant, were not really new. Isaiah had spoken of them centuries earlier. The servant in whom my soul delighteth, says Isaiah. Thou art my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased, says Mark. So briefly, we've seen just one example of how Mark's gospel is organized and structured with a purpose. It presents the ministry of Jesus with the focus of the work and suffering involved with being a servant. We looked at the link to Isaiah. And to who is Jesus? Yes, the perfect servant. But more importantly, we are shown he is the Son of God. Let's turn to Mark chapter 1. We'll continue to put Mark, the gospel according to Mark, under the microscope. We've got much more to look at. Mark 1, verses 1 to 3. The beginning of the gospel of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. As it is written in the prophets, Behold, I send my messenger before thy face, which shall prepare the way before thee. The voice of one crying in the wilderness, Prepare ye the way of the Lord, make his path straight. Mark here is quoting from the Old Testament. First from Malachi 3:1. No need to turn there, but listen as we read Malachi 3:1 itself for the themes we've already touched on. Malachi 3:1. Behold, I will send my messenger, and he shall prepare the way before me. And the Lord whom ye seek shall suddenly come to his temple, even the messenger of the covenant whom ye delight in. Behold, he shall come, saith the Lord of hosts. And in Isaiah 40, verse 3, I'll read that one. The voice of him that crieth in the wilderness, Prepare ye the way of the Lord, of Yahweh. Make straight in the desert a highway for our God. So as we look at these verses, what is the common theme? Prepare the way. Prepare ye the way. Make his paths straight. You might remember from our first talk the usage of Mark and of the Greek word euthaos, translated immediately or straightway. Granted, as it appears multiple times in Mark, its use is to keep the narrative flowing quickly and moving. It is, however, a fun play on words. It is translated straightway many times. The quick lesson for us here, Mark quotes from Isaiah, is that the way of the Lord was being prepared and the path or way was straight. When we read the Greek word eustaios, translated as straightway, we might think of staying straight on the narrow way and doing our work without hesitation. Mark's gospel has more lessons to teach us through its organization and structure. Again, highlighting the theme of threes. Consider that in the first few chapters of Mark, we encounter three desert or wilderness scenes. You're there in Mark 1. Let's look at Mark 1:45. But he went out and began to publish it much, and to blaze abroad the matter, insomuch that Jesus could no more openly enter the city, but was without in desert places, and they came to him from every quarter. That's number one. Mark 6. Mark 6, verses 31 to 35. And he said unto them, come ye yourselves apart into a desert place and rest a while. For there were many coming and going, and they had no leisure so much as to eat. And they departed into a desert place by ship privately. And then verse 35, we'll skip to 35. And when the day was now far spent, his disciples came unto him and said, this is a desert place, and now the time is far past. That little section was number two. And Mark 8, verse 4. And his disciples answered him, from whence can a man satisfy these men with bread here in the wilderness? So we have three scenes or mentions of the desert or wilderness where Jesus and his disciples were working from. Now we consider that we have three boat scenes. Let's turn to Mark 4. These boat scenes, as we will call them, will be referred to several times here this morning. We'll read through them now and develop them as we move along. Just quickly looking at them, Mark 4, verses 35 and 36. And the same day, when even was come, he saith unto them, let us pass over to the other side. And when they had sent away the multitude, they took him even as he was in the ship. And there was also with him other little ships. Number two, Mark 6, 45 to 50. And straightway he constrained his disciples to get into the ship and go to the other side before unto Bethsaida while he sent away the people. And when he had sent them away, he departed into a mountain to pray. And when even was come, the ship was in the midst of the sea, and he alone on the land. And when he saw them toiling and rowing, for the wind was contrary to them, and about the fourth watch of the night, he cometh unto them, walking upon the sea, and would have passed by them. But when they saw him walking upon the sea, they supposed it had been a spirit, and cried out. For they all saw him, and were troubled. And immediately he talked with them, and saith unto them, be of good cheer, it is I, be not afraid. So that was our second boat scene. Number three, Mark 8. We will look at verses 10, 14, and 21. Actually, I'll read verses 10 through 14. Sorry. Mark 8, 10 through 14. And straightway he entered into a ship with his disciples and came into the parts of Dalmanutha. And the Pharisees came forth and began to question him, seeking of him a sign from heaven, tempting him. And he sighed deeply in his spirit and saith, why doth this generation seek after a sign? Verily I say unto you, there shall no sign be given unto this generation. And he left them, and entering into the ship, again departed to the other side. Now the disciples had forgotten to take bread, neither had they in the ship with them more than one loaf. This is just a brief introduction to these scenes. We're going to have more on them later. But these scenes, the wilderness, desert scenes, and the boat scenes, again, set in a trio of three, offer teachings and considerations for our work as a servant, our preparation. Jesus and the disciples went to the desert or wilderness to try to get away, someplace to quietly discuss their work. For them, they were almost always unsuccessful. People just followed them everywhere. These desert scenes might teach us the value of quiet times, to partake of the word and to study quietly, to focus and meditate and prepare ourselves for the three boat scenes, as it were. These might represent turbulence, distraction, bringing fear and doubt, testing our faith, testing our service. We will leave these scenes of wilderness and boat for now. But by way of comparison, let's look at another set of threes, this time in the latter half of Mark. Turn to Mark 11. Our first set of threes here in the latter half of Mark will involve 3 days at the temple, or three episodes at the temple. Look at Mark 11, verse 15. And they come to Jerusalem, and Jesus went into the temple and began to cast out them that sold and bought in the temple, and overthrow the tables of the money changers and the seats of them that sold doves. So in episode number one here at the temple, he purges the temple. Verses 27 and 28. And they come again to Jerusalem, and as he was walking in the temple, there came in to him chief priests and scribes and elders, and saying to him, by what authority doest thou these things? And who gave thee this authority to do these things? So the religious leaders came and challenged him and questioned him in number two. Finally, Mark 13, 1 to 2, our third temple example. Mark 13, 1. And as he went out of the temple, one of his disciples said unto him, Master, see what manner of stones and buildings are here. And Jesus answering said unto him, Seest thou these great buildings? There shall not be one stone left upon another that shall not be thrown down. So Jesus' own disciples still not really understanding what was about to happen. The disciples' lack of understanding leads us to a second set of threes. The three prophecies or predictions of the coming suffering. This again, in the second half of Mark, indicating that what is being taught there. These I will just go over very quickly, as again, we will have more to say about them later, and then I'll wrap up my point at this part of the exhortation. So as we look further in Mark 8, verse 31, we're just reviewing the three prophecies and predictions of the coming suffering, which we were led to by their confusion over the temple. Mark 8:31, and he began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected of the elders and of the chief priests and the scribes and be killed, and after 3 days rise again. Of course, that's the number one prediction. Mark 9:31. For he taught his disciples and said unto them, the Son of Man is delivered into the hands of men, and they shall kill him. And after that he is killed, he shall rise the third day. It's the second time Jesus predicted his suffering. Mark 10:33. Saying, behold, we go up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man shall be delivered into the chief priests and into the scribes, and they shall condemn him to death and shall deliver him to the Gentiles. So with these sets of threes, found in the latter half of the Gospel of Mark, we see a series of sufferings. Let's review. The temple threes, his own people, then the scribes and the Pharisees, and then his own disciples. They all caused him sadness, disappointment, and despair, as they all misunderstood his message of being a servant and having to suffer and die as a result. The three predictions of suffering, then, point to the ultimate example of suffering encountered by the servant. In summary, the three desert scenes, the three boat scenes, highlighting Jesus' work and ministry in the first part of Mark. The three temple scenes, the three prophecies of suffering, highlighting Jesus as the suffering servant. At this point, we might take just a second to reflect on our own lives and the truth. The work, the effort, often tiresome and full of trial and tribulation. We face nothing like our Lord and Master faced, but our challenges are there and often difficult. The cares and concerns of this life, then anguish and pain, and then for some, true suffering. When our brief time draws to a close, will we be able to say, like Paul, I have fought a good fight, I have finished the course, I have kept the faith. Henceforth, there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that day, and not to me only, but unto all them that also that love his appearing. That was 2 Timothy 4, 7 and 8. And the words of the Master himself, I have glorified thee on the earth, I have finished the work which thou gavest me to do. John 17, verse 4. So we've attempted to show the way Mark organizes his record, his narrative. The way he does this, we can better understand and appreciate in certain aspects of Jesus' ministry and better apply it to our own walk in the truth. We continue. Let's go to Mark chapter 2. We mentioned the term chiasmus earlier. There appears to be an example of one of these literary type devices in Mark chapter 2. This also is another example of threes, as we have recorded, as we have here recorded three conflicts with religious leaders, scribes, and Pharisees. Follow along. We're not going to read the entire account, but follow along. Let your eyes go down through the chapter as I go over it. In verses 1 to 12, Jesus heals the man with a palsy or needing healing of his feet. This caused a controversy with the scribes who questioned his claim that he had the ability to forgive sins. Now, we'll go to the last example in this set, this controversy set, and go to chapter 3, 1 to 6. So we've read the beginning. Let's read the end. Again, I'm not going to read it. I'm going to tell you about it, but you use your eyes and scan down through the narrative. Chapters 3, 1 to 6. Here, Jesus again would heal, this time a withered hand. And the Pharisees had issues with his healing on the Sabbath. So, the beginning of our set, healing and forgiveness of sins, the problem. And the end, healing and the problem being healing on the Sabbath. Healing, problem. Healing, then a problem. Now, back up to the top, so to speak. The section, the little bit just after the healing of the lame man. Chapter 2, 13 to 17. What is their next controversy? Jesus calls Levi to be his disciple, and a feast is called. Jesus eats with Levi's associates and friends, we assume. Here, styled here, publicans and sinners. We have a conflict of eating with sinners. The Pharisees and the religious leaders have issues again. Drop down to the section just before chapter 3, the one in chapter 3 we considered. Chapter 2, 23 to 38. This is a long section, but basically, as you peruse it, you remember it. The disciples pluck the ears of corn to eat on the Sabbath. The religious leaders have a problem with this. In verse 24, they say, why do they do what is not lawful on the Sabbath? So we see the mirroring problems offending the scribes and Pharisees. Eat with sinners, eat on the Sabbath. This brings us to the center, Mark 2, 18 through 22. The controversy here is fasting. Why does he not fast? The scribes and the Pharisees and these three conflicts with Jesus are presented here by Mark in a way that makes them easy to remember. The believers of the time are being shown that Jesus was in the midst of his time of work and service to his people. He would heal the feet and heal the hands, and there would be a lesson in it. He would eat with the sinners and gather needed food on the Sabbath. He would have to explain why it was not the time of fasting for he and his disciples. Also, there was a lesson in the lesson. Consider the healing of the feet, allowing one to walk. Consider healing the hand, making it as whole as the other, ready to help. They and we are being shown that we must make use of our hands and feet to work and to serve others. This leads to another consideration from Isaiah. Let's turn to Isaiah 58. Here, the nation, the people, they think they're doing pretty good. Isaiah 58, verses 1 and 2. cry out, spare not, lift up thy voice like a trumpet, and show my people their transgression, and the house of Jacob their sins. Yet they seek me daily, and delight to know my ways, as a nation that did righteousness, and forsook not the ordinance of their God. They ask of me the ordinances of justice, they that take delight in approaching to God. So they see themselves at this point as being pretty good servants. But Isaiah 59 will tell us the real story. Look at Isaiah 59, 8 and 9. The way of peace they know not, and there is no judgment in their goings. They have made them crooked paths. Whosoever goeth therein shall not know peace. Therefore is judgment far from us, neither doth justice overtake us. We wait for light, but behold, obscurity. For brightness, but we walk in darkness. They were not humble servants. They were on crooked paths, no peace, and in darkness. To link this back to Mark's gospel, we turn back over to chapter 58 and note the use of the word fast and affliction, which was the subject of what we just considered in Mark. Consider Isaiah 58, verse 3. Wherefore have we fasted, say they, and thou seest not? Wherefore have we afflicted our soul, and thou takest no knowledge? Behold, in the day of your fast, ye find pleasure and exact all your labors. Isaiah 58, 4 speaks of, behold, ye fast for strife and debate, and to smite with the fist of wickedness. Isaiah 58, 5, is it such a fast that I have chosen? So their focus was on fasting and being afflicted, to be seen of men, maybe have others feel sorry for them. They think they are doing the right thing. As verse 5 says, wilt thou call this a fast and an acceptable day to Yahweh? What is really expected? Isaiah 58, 6 and 7. Notice the tie back to Mark. Is not this the fast that I have chosen, to loose the bands of the wickedness, to undo the heavy burdens, and to let the oppressed go free, that ye break every yoke? Is it not to deal thy bread to the hungry, and that thou bring the poor that are cast out to thy house? When thou seest the naked, that thou cover him, and that thou hide not thyself from thine own flesh. Look out for others. Help others. What else might the spirit of this type of fast be referring to? While thinking back to our chiasmus in Mark, consider verses 13 and 14 of Isaiah 58. If thou turn away thy foot from the Sabbath, from doing thy pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy of Yahweh, honorable, and shalt honor him, not doing thine own ways, nor finding thine own pleasure, nor speaking thine own words, then shalt thou delight thyself in Yahweh, and I will cause thee to ride upon the high places of the earth, and feed thee with the heritage of Jacob thy father, for the mouth of Yahweh has spoken it. The idea again, see the teaching of the fasting and the Sabbath, not just some ritual to be seen of men. Remember that in Mark, we had accounts of healing, the lame man's feet, and then the man with the withered hand. Here in Isaiah, what was Israel's condition as it regards their hands and feet? Just picking out the phrases in Isaiah 58, verse 4. Ye fast for strife and debate. Ye smite with the fist of wickedness. 58, verse 9. If thou take away from the midst of thee the yoke, the putting forth of the finger, and speaking vanity. Isaiah 59:3. For your hands are defiled with blood, and your fingers with iniquity. Isaiah 59:7. Their feet run to evil. In Mark, Jesus healed a man's feet and then a man's hand. Considering the link to Isaiah, what is the message for us? To be a good servant, Our feet and hands must be healed. No hitting with the fist. No pointing of the finger. No running to evil, hastening to harm the innocent. By contrast, which should be our serving attitude? What does Isaiah say about Yahweh in this vein? Look at Isaiah 59, verse 1. Behold, Yahweh's hand is not shortened, that it cannot save, neither his ear heavy, that it cannot hear. Isaiah 50, verse 2. Wherefore, when I came, was there no man? When I called, was there none to answer? Is my hand shortened at all, that it cannot redeem? Yahweh's hand is always outstretched to help us. We must have our hands outstretched to help our brethren, and not clenched up in a divisive fist. As we turn back to Mark chapter 4, we have seen the lessons from this chiasmus. The true meaning of the Sabbath and fasting as it relates to being a servant, and the true meaning of having our hands and feet healed. Our next consideration here in Mark will be the accounts, two accounts of healing the blind. One will be called the blind man of Bethsaida. The next will be Bartimaeus, found beside the way. As we continue, once again, try not to be confused. We've got two blind men being healing with a lot of B's in the mix there. We hope the message will be clear. However, before we consider these accounts, we must preface with a look at those boat scenes again to set the stage. So in Mark 4, we're going to add a little bit to what we considered earlier on those boat scenes as it brings us to the healing of these blind men. Mark 4, verse 1. And he began to teach by the seaside, and there was gathered into him a great multitude. There's the crowd. Mark 4, verse 36. And when they had sent away the multitude, they took even as he was in the ship, and there was also with him other little ships. Verse 39. And he arose and rebuked the wind, and said unto the sea, peace be still. And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. So there is a boat scene. This all led to the healing of Legion in chapter 5. So what we're trying to develop here is a flow of the three boat accounts that we go through will be crowds, a boat scene, and then healing. Go to Mark 6. Mark 6, verse 34, and Jesus came out and saw much people and was moved with compassion toward them, because they were as sheep not having a shepherd, and he began to teach them many things. There's the crowd. Verses 45 and 49. And straightway he constrained the disciples to get into the ship and go to the other side before unto Bethsaida, while he sent away the people. But when they saw him walking upon the sea, they supposed it had been a spirit and cried out. So there's the boat scene. Then the healing, simply by touching, in verse 56. And he besought him that they might touch, if it were, even the border of his garment, and as many as touched him were made whole. There's the healing. Crowd, boat scene, and then healing. Finally, Mark 8, verse 1. In those days, the multitude, being very great and having nothing to eat, Jesus called his disciples unto him and saith unto them. So there's the crowds, the multitude. Verse 13. And he left them, and entering into the ship, departed to the other side. There's the boat. Crowd. Boat scene. Healing. We'll pull this together in a second. But this has left us with the healing of this third account. And this is the healing of the blind man of Bethsaida in verses 22 to 26. So the boat scenes here have led us to a passage which is only found in Mark's gospel. 97% of the gospel according to Mark can be found in other gospels. What we have come to is again only in Mark, the healing of the blind man of Bethsaida. Let's read Mark 8, 22-26. And he cometh to Bethsaida, and they bring a blind man unto him, and besought him to touch him. And he took the blind man by the hand and led him out of the town. And when he had spit on his eyes and put his hands upon him, he asked him if he saw aught. And he looked up and said, I see men as trees walking. After that, he put his hands again upon his eyes, made him look up, and he was restored and saw every man clearly. And he sent him away to his house, saying, neither go into the town nor tell it to any of the town, any in the town. In this account, which may have puzzled some, we see the healing in two phases. Some have proposed that it is represented here is Jesus with his disciples. He tries to teach them through the boat scenes we looked at. He is trying to show them that crowds would come. They would need to have the attitude of a servant. The sea of people, even nations, would be difficult, turbulent, and stormy. Jesus would, as the perfect servant, he would calm the storm, the waves, and even walk on the water. He would offer healing. Crowds, boat scene, healing. But Jesus' role as servant included more than this. His disciples, having been touched once through these boat scenes lessons, had begun to get the message. But everything was just not clear yet, as in the case with the blind man of Bethsaida. So Jesus' work with the disciples would enter a second phase, similar to the second part of the healing of the blind man. In the second half of Mark's gospel, Jesus must touch them again to further clear their sight. This would take time. He must teach them of another aspect of being a servant, the aspect of travail, trial, and suffering. To this end, Mark will now present a familiar set of threes. We've referred to them previously as the three predictions of the stake, now or suffering. Now we wish to consider them the way chapters, the focus now on the way. Reading, no need to look it up, but remember how Mark opened his record, as it is in Mark 1, verses 2 and 3. As it is written in the prophets, behold, I send my messenger before thy face, which shall prepare the way before thee. The voice of one crying in the wilderness, prepare ye the way of the Lord, make his path straight. Remember that in symbol, we are seeing possibly the second touching of the blind man of Bethsaida. What do these three mentions of the way in chapters 8, 9, and 10 attempt to show the disciples about being the perfect servant? For context, we'll look at them again. Mark 8, 27. And Jesus went out and his disciples into the towns of Caesarea Philippi, and by the way, he asked his disciples, saying unto them, who do men say that I am? That was number one. Mark 9, 33. And he came to Capernaum, and being in the house, he asked them, what was it that you disputed among yourselves by the way? But they held their peace, for by the way, they had disputed among themselves who should be the greatest. And number three, Mark 10, 32. And they were in the way going up to Jerusalem, and Jesus went before them, and they were amazed, and as they followed, they were afraid. And he took again the 12 and began to tell them what things should happen unto him. We started in 8:27 at Caesarea Philippi and have gone to Capernaum and finally on to Jerusalem with these three examples. Sprinkled throughout this latter section of Mark is the theme of being Jesus in the way, on the way to Jerusalem. In symbol here, the second touching of the blind man from Bethsaida, possibly. Where might Mark have read similar themes that may have led him to describe our Lord's journey to Jerusalem like this, journeying in the way? Isaiah. We'll look at Isaiah chapter 30, verse 1. Isaiah 30, I'm sorry, verse 21. Isaiah 30, 21. And thine ears shall hear a wonderful word behind thee, saying, this is the way, walk ye in it. when you turn to the right hand, and when you turn to the left. This is the way, walk ye in it. Israel had been wicked and off course. Hear a plea for obedience. Walk ye in it. Turn to Isaiah 34 and 35. Here again, the example of a disobedient Israel, and then the description of them finding their way. Isaiah 30, chapter 34 will describe judgment on the nations. Verses 1 and 2. Come near, ye nations, to hear, and hearken, ye people. Let the earth hear, and all that is therein, the world and all things that come forth of it. For the indignation of Yahweh is upon all nations, and his fury upon all their armies. He shall utterly destroy them. He hath delivered them to the slaughter. Drop down to verse 8. For it is the day of Yahweh's vengeance, and the year of recompenses for the controversy of Zion. We did not read it, but verse 5 mentions Idumea, and we think of Edom, and perhaps the Arabic peoples. Verses 9 and 10, scan the description there. Burning pitch reminds us of Sodom. Down through the rest of the chapter, desolation and wild animals move in. You might recognize that all these animals are unclean. So coming off this judgment, desolation and uncleanness of chapter 34, we come to chapter 35. Chapter 35, verses 1 and 2. The wilderness and the solitary place shall be glad for them, and the desert shall rejoice and blossom as the rose. It shall blossom abundantly and rejoice even with joy and singing. The glory of Lebanon shall be given unto it, the excellency of Carmel and Sharon. They shall see the glory of Yahweh and the excellency of our God. The themes of Mark, the wilderness, the desert, it will blossom. Isaiah 55, 3 through 5. I'm sorry, Isaiah 35, 3 and 5. Strengthen ye the weak hands and confirm the feeble knees. Then the eyes of the blind shall be opened, and the ears of the deaf shall be unstopped. With these verses, we're reminded of some of the miracles represented by Mark in the gospel, healing of hands and feet. What about journeying on the way? Isaiah 35, verse 8. And an highway shall be there, and a way, and it shall be called the way of holiness. The unclean shall not pass over it, but it shall be for those, the wayfaring men, though fools shall not err therein. You might note a marginal reference that some of you will have in verse 8. It says, for it shall be for those, might be more accurately rendered, for he shall be with them. Rotherham has it as, he himself shall be traveling the road. So perhaps a prophecy of Jesus and his walk on the way to Jerusalem, Isaiah 34 and 35, that corrected Israel to find its way. If Mark had these references in Isaiah in his mind as he wrote, what message, what point does he bring out? We must follow him. We must walk with him on the way. Verse 9 tells us the redeemed will walk there. This is Jesus, the Son of God, the perfect servant who is on this highway. Israel struggled mightily and continues to today, but they will be restored in the way. Figuratively, we are on the way, trying to stay on the straight and narrow path as we struggle with sin. We take comfort that he is with us. He himself traveled the road. He prepared the way. If we are able to follow our Lord's example and stay in the way, some of the wonderful things described here in Isaiah 35 will be realized for us. To wrap up this section of Mark, of being on the way, turn back to Mark chapter 10. We will now encounter the second blind man. Mark 10, verse 46. And they came to Jericho, and as he went out of Jericho with his disciples and a great number of people, blind Bartimaeus, the son of Timaeus, sat by the highway side begging. And when he heard that it was Jesus, he began to cry out and say, Jesus, thou son of David, have mercy on me. And many charged him and said he should hold his peace. But he cried out the more, a great deal, thou son of David, have mercy on me. And Jesus stood and commanded him to be called. And they called the blind man, saying unto him, Be of good comfort, rise, he calleth thee. And he, casting away his garment, rose and came to Jesus. And Jesus answered and said unto him, What wilt thou that I should do unto thee? The blind man said unto him, Lord, that I might receive my sight. And Jesus said unto him, Go thy way, thy faith hath made thee whole. And immediately he received his sight and followed Jesus in the way. Bartimaeus means son of the unclean. Notice Mark repeats it in verse 46. This man represents uncleanness. He is sitting by the highway begging. He hears that Jesus is coming and cries out. In verse 49, Jesus asked for Bartimaeus. In verse 51, Jesus asked what he could do for him. Bartimaeus asked for his sight. Jesus answered, Go thy way, thy faith hath made thee whole. Note that Jesus here tells Bartimaeus, Go thy way, telling him he was now free to go wherever he wanted. But Bartimaeus chooses to be with Jesus and follow him in the way. We remember the words of Isaiah 35, verse 8, And an highway shall be there, and a way, and it shall be called the way of holiness. This highway was not for the unclean. Bartimaeus had been made clean, symbolically. Finally, Isaiah 55, 6 and 7, Seek ye the Yahweh while he may be found. Call upon him while he is near. Let the wicked forsake his way, and the unrighteous man his thoughts. And let him return unto Yahweh, and he will have mercy upon him, and to our God, for he will abundantly pardon. The key words there, seek ye Yahweh while he may be found, and call upon him while he is near. Bartimaeus was seeking, but with no sight, he had to cry out. He had to cry out while Jesus was near. We must seek him while he is near. We must follow. He has traveled the way and can help us to follow in the way. So if you think back, the three boat scenes helped open the eyes of the disciples, but they needed more. The three predictions of suffering culminated in the healing of blind Bartimaeus. So we see the teaching clearly now. His disciples would see clearly eventually through two touchings, as with the blind man of Bethsaida. So we make our way to our conclusion. We take one last familiar look at those set of threes we've alluded to several times, found in Mark 8, 9, and 10. They are the crucifixion and suffering prophecies given by Christ. We won't read them again, but they all follow the same pattern. Jesus issues his prediction as he explains what will happen. Next, the disciples misunderstand as Peter is rebuked in verse 8. There's discussion who is greatest in chapter 9. And questions over who will sit with him in his right hand and left in the kingdom. After all of these, instruction. So the pattern here, prediction, misunderstanding, and then instruction. It is this final instance in chapter 10 that this final bit of instruction we want to consider now. In Mark 10, 32 through 34, we read, And they were in the way going up to Jerusalem, and Jesus went before them, and they were amazed, and as they followed, they were afraid. And he took again the 12 and began to tell them what things should happen unto him, saying, Behold, we go up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man shall be delivered into the chief priests and into the scribes, and they shall condemn him to death and shall deliver him to the Gentiles. And they shall mock him and scourge him, shall spit on him and shall kill him, and the third day he shall rise again. Drop down to verses 42 to 45. But Jesus called them to him and saith unto them, Ye know that they which are accounted to rule over the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and their great ones exercise authority upon them. But so shall it not be among you. But whosoever will be great among you shall be your minister, and whosoever of you will be the chiefest shall be servant of all. For even the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister and to give his life a ransom for many. Mark may have had Isaiah on his mind again. One last time, we briefly go back. Turn to Isaiah 50, but keep your hand here in Mark 10. Some of these words will lead us into our memorial remarks. Here in Isaiah 50, we will see more allusions to the suffering servant, as the wording is so similar. So consider Mark 10:34, and they shall mock him. Now, look at Isaiah 50, verse 7. For the Lord God will help me, therefore I shall not be confounded. The word confounded here means to be injured by insults. So they were going to mock him, but he would not be injured by their insults. Mark 10:34 says they shall scourge him. And Isaiah 50, verse 6, I gave my back to the smiters and my cheeks to them that plucked off the hair. Mark 10:34, and they shall spit on him. Isaiah 50, verse 6, at the end, I hid not my face from shame and spitting. And in 10:34, they shall kill him. Isaiah instead foretells the response of the perfect servant. Isaiah 50, verse 7, at the end, therefore have I set my face like a flint, and I know that I shall not be ashamed. Here in Mark, with echoes from Isaiah, Jesus is trying to focus his disciples' vision on what is to transpire. It had been prophesied. He is trying to sharpen our vision and minds. We know it happened. We should never forget. In our tiny period of walking on the way to Jerusalem, there must be trials, difficulties to endure. We must set our face like a flint and not be ashamed. Back in Mark 10:34, after the mocking and the scourging and spitting, it says, and they shall kill him, and the third day he shall rise again. In the Gospel according to Mark, Mark has set forth his record in a very thoughtful and organized way. It might be interesting to note this. Mark's audience of the first century would need something fast-paced and easy to remember. Their lifestyles were simple and slow-paced. On the contrary, our lives are fast-paced. Usually we're always on the go. But we need to slow down and really read the scriptures and study to sometimes find the messages hidden therein. Remarkably, Mark addresses both of these needs. His gospel record is quick, moving, and organized in a way that it could be easily remembered if it were spoken to people. For us, hidden lessons are there that may take some time to see and require study. So the question is, who say ye that he is? Do we understand? Do we remember him? Indeed, Jesus is the Christ. But this was to involve shame and suffering. Are we joining him on that highway? Are we allowing him to heal us? Are we following the example, his example, as a servant? Do we work in a positive way to build up with our hands, extend our hand to help and not to clench them in a fist or point a finger? Do we allow our feet to be healed and follow him and not go on our own way? We've read that even up to the end, the disciples would be distracted. Who would be greatest? Grant me sit on the right hand and on the left. This is not what Jesus was teaching. Even Peter, meaning well, was told to get behind me, Satan. You're hindering. You do not quite grasp what must happen. The wonderful message to them and to us, deny self, do not seek gain. Learn to be last, not first. We read these words moments ago, but as we close, we consider them again in preparation for remembering him. Mark 10:42-45. But Jesus called them to him and saith unto them, ye know that they which are accounted to rule over the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and their great ones exercise authority upon them. But so shall it not be among you, but whosoever will be great among you shall be your minister, and whosoever of you will be the chiefest shall be servant of all. For even the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister, and to give his life a ransom for many. Thank you.